wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Time now for Abandoned Manitoba, where we check in with Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Before we jump into this week's Abandoned Manitoba, I have to ask you, we've been getting reaction about the Kirkwood building burning down this week. What did you think when you heard the news?
Well, it's a real shame. It's a really distinctive building. It has had a colored history. It was constructed by a noted architect and builder. You know, it's really a shame to see these old buildings go down. But my first thought was, wow, it's been a bad month for heritage here in Manitoba. You know, that's now three historic buildings in the city here that have been destroyed. The Sherbrooke, on Sherbrooke Street, we have the Ferndale Apartments. It was burned on New Year's Eve. Just last week, we lost the Kenora Apartments on William Avenue, and of course, now the Kirkwood.
Yes, it's been a bad month for buildings, for sure. So remind us of the clue that you gave us last week.
Well, February is Black History Month, and I thought we'd talk about a vacant building that featured prominently in the first Black Railway Union in all of North America. It was formed in 1917 by a Winnipeg man. Very little is known about this man, though, and I think, based on my research, that I now know why.
I think I might know what building you're talking about, but what building are you talking about?
It's the Craig Block, a small two-story brick building on the east side of Main Street, just north of the railway underpass near Higgins Avenue. It was built in 1894 for merchant George Craig, and that's why it's called the Craig Block. The building's main floor was used as rental space for a variety of retail businesses through the years. So in the early days, for example, it hosted such things as a grocery, a furniture store, a drugstore, various restaurants, and then for quite a number of years, a pool hall. A space on the upper floor was used either as a warehouse for the business or as an assembly room. So in 1922, the second floor was occupied by a labor union called the Order of Sleeping Car Porters. It represented Black men who had been hired from all over Canada, the United States, and the Caribbean to work for the Canadian Pacific Railway and the Canadian National Railway.
Why did Black railway workers need their own union?
Well, to answer that question, we have to first consider the nature of their work. Railways were the only means of long-distance transportation in the early 20th century, and often, trains would take several days to reach their destinations. Railway passengers were offered meals and accommodation while aboard the trains. Porters, who were almost exclusively Black, by the way, tended to the needs of the passengers, and they had many duties to fulfill. They greeted embarking passengers and helped them to stow their luggage and settle into their seats. They served drinks and meals, managed the environment of the coaches by keeping them clean and tidy, warm or cool as the seasons dictated. They acted as chaperones for children and, well, frankly, the occasional adult who, through either illness or perhaps drunkenness, couldn't care for themselves. They kept watch for troublemakers such as thieves and gamblers. They set up, they took down beds, and they generally kept the passengers entertained during their long voyages.
That sounds like a lot of work.
It was, and the working conditions and the rate of pay for the porters were poor. Essentially, the railway saw them as cheap, easily replaced labor. The men were given no sleeping quarters for those long voyages, and they were not allowed to sit with the passengers or eat and drink with them. Passengers would often call the porters by demeaning names. It was a little-known story, I think, in Canadian history that will be getting more attention soon. Winnipeggers may recall that last year, a CBC television series was filmed here in the city on the subject of Black railway porters, and it will be broadcast later this month.
Were there no existing unions the Black porters could join?
Well, railway workers in Canada were represented by a union called the Canadian Brotherhood of Railway Employees. It was formed in 1908. However, that union's constitution prevented non-white employees from being members. So in the spring of 1917, as I said, Winnipeg-based porters formed the aforementioned Order of the Sleeping Car Porters. Their names, J.W. Barber, B.F. Jones, P. White, and John Arthur Robinson.
I notice most of the men are referred to only by initials.
Yeah, that's what I find curious about this story. It suggests to me that we know next to nothing about three of the men, not even their given names. In contrast, we know Mr. Robinson's full name. Yet even that's curious because very little has been written about him. You know, he was an important labor leader who I would definitely consider a memorable Manitoban. When did he arrive in Winnipeg? We don't know. Where did he live? Did he have a family? What were his interests? How long did he live here? None of it. We know. I thought it would be interesting to know more about this pioneering labor leader in Manitoba's history. So I spent several days of essentially fruitless research looking for information about John Arthur Robinson. I was ready to give up. I literally could find nothing. But as sometimes happens in this kind of detective work, one little detail finally cracked the case. I found an obituary for his wife that mentioned him. It turned out the reason that I found nothing about John Arthur Robinson was that labor historians have his name wrong. His name was actually John Ashley Robinson. Once I knew his correct name, all the pieces fell into place. I now know more about his life here in Winnipeg.
What do you now know about Mr. Robinson?
Well, he was born on St. Kitts. That's a small island in the Caribbean, around 1883. We don't know the exact birth date. At some point, he moved to New York City, where it appears he met and married his U.S.-born wife, Lucy, and they had a daughter named Violet. John was recruited to work as a porter for the Canadian Pacific Railway in 1907, and a year later, 1908, his wife and young daughter joined him in Winnipeg. They lived in a comfortable house on the south side of Selkirk Avenue near Main Street. John was a member of at least two fraternal organizations, the Masons and the Elks, and the family attended a church called the Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church that was located in a small building on Alexander Avenue.
You said you found an obituary for Mrs. Robinson?
Right. She died in 1941 at the young age of 57 and was buried in Elmwood Cemetery. Just 6 years later, 1947, daughter Violet also died and was buried with her mother in Elmwood. I suspect the loss of his wife and daughter must have been more than John Robinson could bear, because that year, 1947, he retired from the railway and he moved back to St. Kitts, where he lived with his sister until his death 3 years later at the age of 67 in August of 1950. Now, interestingly, he had not been forgotten here in Winnipeg, even though he had moved away. Local newspapers ran an obituary for him that I was able to find only when I knew his full correct name. Unfortunately, well, he did not live to see a major breakthrough for Black railway porters that occurred in 1953.
What happened that year?
Well, in its first 2 years of operation, when the Order of Sleeping Car Porters had first been formed, they did succeed in negotiating two contracts with the Canadian National Railway. Those contracts improved wages and job protection for the porters, but unfortunately, no similar success occurred at the Canadian Pacific Railway. Indeed, that railway fired several long-serving porters for engaging in union activity. John Robinson took a leading role with the order. He argued, for example, to the Canadian Brotherhood of Railway Employees, the big union, that Blacks should be accepted as full members, not as auxiliary members with fewer rights. You know, I find it ironic that this union, this Canadian Brotherhood of Railway Employees, could fight to advance the rights of railway workers in Canada while denying those same rights to Black workers who did the same work. You know, their struggle for fair treatment, regardless of race, continued right up to 1953. That's when the first Black man in Canada was hired as a sleeping car conductor. Not a porter, a conductor. That was a higher paid job that had previously been reserved exclusively for whites. You know, it's too bad, unfortunately, that John Robinson had already passed away, so he didn't live to see this new development. The Order of Sleeping Car Porters that he founded operated in the Craig Block into the late 1950s. So it operated over several decades, advancing the rights of Black railway workers.
What is the present status of the Craig Block?
Well, the building was occupied by a sporting goods store when one of our MHS volunteer photographers took a picture of it in 2019. I was there a few weeks ago, though, and the building is now vacant with a large for sale sign in its front window. Several other buildings in the vicinity are likewise empty. I hope the Craig Block finds a new owner and that this owner will recognize and appreciate its historical significance as having contributed to the advancement of Black people in Canada.
Especially in a month like February, it's important to recognize that history. Thank you so much, Gordon. And what's up next week?
We're going to consider a pair of abandoned metal objects that, beginning in the mid-1960s, gave Winnipeggers a unique, and I would say historic, view of their city.
So curious. I look forward to it.
More next week.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons